Welcome to Teach Languages Online, the podcast dedicated to bringing you the best advice about your online teaching business. I'm Lindsay Williams, an online language teacher from the UK, and I'm your host. Now, each episode we begin, I want to recommend something for you. Now, this episode, the start of a new month, my recommendation for you is my free My Month in Teaching planner. Now, you may know, especially if you're a language learner yourself, that as well as the solo language learner planner and the online language teacher planner, I have a free monthly planner for language learners. Well, now there's one for teachers too. Woo! Get your free teacher planner for this month at lindsaydoeslanguages.com/free-teacher-planner. Now, let's get into today's show. Time for another interview this episode, which we'll dive right into in just a moment. This time it's with Tevi Baisley from French Speak. Now, Tevi focuses on helping people get over a plateau and has a group program for people with some French basics or with rusty French who can't quite form those sentences yet. It's actually going to be running live very, very soon at the time of sharing this with you. So if you're learning French yourself, be sure to visit bit.ly/beyondbeginnerfrench to learn more. Hello, welcome to this episode. I'm here today with Tevi Baisley, who runs French Speak from her home in Brisbane, Australia. And languages have always been a passion for her. And being raised by an Irish mum speaking English and a Cambodian father speaking French to her, it's easy to see how. Now, I've invited Tevi onto the podcast today because we've worked together for a while and I'm always impressed by how Tevi combines teaching online with teaching offline. So that's going to be a focus for our discussion in this episode. So welcome, Tevi. Bonjour.
Bonjour. Thanks so much for having me, Lindsay. I'm super excited. You can probably hear it in my voice. Thanks for the lovely intro. I have been in Australia and calling Australia my home for a dozen years now. For the first 20 years of my life, I grew up in France. So I'm always a bit torn with where is home.
Yeah, I know. I should have been like, really, like her current home.
I like that.
I said to you, hometown of Brisbane, and you were like, oh, but Paris always feels like my hometown. So yeah, I get it. It must be really, really strange to have, even me, I feel like to describe Milton Keynes, where I live now, as my hometown, still feels like a betrayal to where I grew up. And that's like an hour down the road. It's ridiculous.
So, it does. It feels like you're giving up something. I like that word, betrayal. I can't betray anyone, so I can't call anywhere home other than Paris.
I mean, Paris, right? No one can betray Paris. I think that's fair to say. I think it's something we can all agree on. So you started French Speak teaching offline, right? Like I think many of us do. And what was it then that made you want to bring online into the mix?
So the teaching offline was mainly because I had a full-time career. I used to work in insurance and part-time, and with word of mouth, I started getting a few students on the side. It wasn't something I advertised, but soon I realized, well, this is something I love doing. And for anyone who knows what it's like to live away from their home country and language, we feel like we're forgetting our mother tongue, which is always a little bit scary. So the teaching was reinforcing that, letting me talk about French in France with lots of people. So the offline was lots of fun as a side thing. The online came later on when I went full time and really created French Speak, because we wanted to help students who were lived further away from the suburb I was in. Because it's a very spread out city and people after a long day's work, even though we were in the same city, didn't necessarily want to get another bus or another train or drive to across town. So less travel time meant we could do longer lessons or I could fit more lessons.
That makes perfect sense. So you started in terms of online by just doing the simple switch of switching from offline lessons to adding, okay, but you can also have a lesson online, just like exactly. You would offline. So the same kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes. It was a bit accidental. It was, well, if you don't want to come to me, but you still want to learn with me, why don't we meet up on Skype? Why don't we meet up on Zoom? And then the rest is history.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense as well with the people that you've already worked with offline, because they know you. So I think there's even now compared to when I started. I mean, what year did you start going online as well?
Probably 2013, probably. Right.
Yeah. So about the same time as me. Yeah. And it was like, there was almost a bit of a fear of like, oh, is that a thing? Is that the same? And even now I think it's still kind of there. It still doesn't, to some people, feel like it's the equivalent of, you know? And so working with students who have already known you in an offline setting, I think is a great way to just for you to give you that experience, but then also to get those first students for online lessons as well. And how have you found that transition? It's been a few years now. What's been the shift in the balance of time? Is it kind of 50-50, or do you work offline more than online? How does that look?
Well, I still say I'm still transitioning. I don't have a committed view of what I want to do. I guess in 5 years, do I want to do all of one, all of the other? There's pros and cons in both. So at the moment, the way the balance is, it looks like one day where I'm out and about doing in-person classes, and then 2 days I'm doing online, mainly groups and private. And then the rest of my week is all the social media, the website, and managing the team, because I've got three teachers who also do a variety of offline and online. There's only one of them who does just online from France.
Oh, wow. So there's three teachers as well, and they all still, apart from one, so the two of them do a mix of off and online.
Yes.
Based in Brisbane.
Based in Brisbane.
Yeah. And then one person based in France who works online.
Online only. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. That's really cool. And do you prefer yourself, in terms of the teaching side of it, do you prefer teaching online or offline, or do you like that mix?
I like having the mix. It's like picking your favorite child, I think. It's a really hard one for me to give up one. So I've loved that. Online, I really enjoy teaching the private classes online, but I feel the groups offline in person, especially the corporate clients we have where we go and teach on their lunch break, that energy I get from the room and walking into a business and leaving and feeling, oh, we've brightened their day a little bit, because it might be an accountancy firm and we've walked out and we've just brought a little bit of French into their day, and everyone's left with a big smile on their face and a bit less stressed and ready to take on the rest of their week. So that energy for the physical in-person group ones is lots of fun.
And you've not found that same energy with online group lessons in quite the same way then?
Not quite. No. And I'm still working on more groups, a variety of groups, or the right offering for groups online. I'm just at the infancy of that. I've mainly been doing online privates.
That makes sense. I think they are different for sure. And I think that there's a tendency, one of the reasons I wanted to speak to you about this is I think there's a tendency to think that in terms of being an independent language teacher, online is like the sort of holy grail. Like online is like what you're aiming for, 100% online. And it's not going to be that for everyone. It's just not going to, and it's not always going to be right. And I think having still like elements that exist, you know, in the real world, IRL, offline, brings a whole new dimension to things, and it makes it quite exciting, I think.
And it does. There's things you just can't do. And I've kind of seen it as it's a real VIP experience, because we can go and I package a lesson with a coffee and a friend and a macaron in a local coffee shop. So it's a whole experience. We're there, we're eating the macaron, we're having a nice coffee, there's people around us, and we're just building this little bubble with two people or a small group of four. And we're just in our little world, and it just takes everyone out of their reality. And you can do, I did a half day VIP. It was like more like a 3 hour where we walked along the river in Brisbane and just spoke in French and talked about, let's cross the road here. Tell me, what do you think that person was doing or was listening to on their phone on the way over? We just did lots of conversations about the world around us that we can't sometimes when we're on Skype or on Zoom.
Was this a language workshop with
it kind of was
Language Lovers AU, right?
It was a bit different. It wasn't an organized thing, but Rebecca was from Language Lovers Australia AU, presented at a conference about bringing an immersion experience out of, or doing it from home, basically doing it in your own hometown or in your own suburb, and telling people, language lovers and students, that they can organize these themselves. And that was her angle. And from a teacher's point of view, I just took so many notes as she was speaking, because I thought, well, I can offer that and totally tailor the roadmap and the objective of the lesson with the student, help them prepare for it beforehand, debrief with them afterwards. So you could do it different ways. So we ended up doing a 3-hour thing ourselves. And it was all based on that workshopping.
That's cool. This leads to my next question. So the people that came to that event, workshop, walking around Brisbane, were they primarily offline students that have worked with you in the past? Were they online students, or were they people that had found you for the first time? What did that look like?
So it was just a one-on-one, and it was a VIP half day, spend a half day with Tavi and basically learn some French and use some French that you wouldn't usually in a classroom. Mm-hmm. And it was a student from interstate who had been following her French speak online, and she happened to have a job placement for 2 months in Brisbane. So when she got here, she's very much, I'm going to learn face to face with you, or I'm not going to learn with you. She's like, just not interested in online lessons. So she said, I'm in town for 2 months and I've been following you. Can we have some lessons? So we did a few intensive, like 2-3 times a week, 1 hour around her work schedule. And then we wrapped it up with a half day VIP at the end, where we walked around and talked about what we could see, and we did a bit of a scavenger hunt where she had to find 3 of this and 5 of that, and it was lots of fun.
Cool. Just a quick question, when you say interstate, does that mean she's from the same state as Brisbane but not from the city normally?
Interstate is another Australian state, so it's about so I'm in Brisbane and she lives in Sydney, so she's technically in a different area. Australia's so
interstate,
huge.
It's other state. Okay, right.
Another state. Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify because I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Okay. No, Brisbane is, the Queensland, which is the state I live in, is big enough that if someone really traveled from the other end, it would be like London to St. Petersburg. It is so big.
Oh, this blows my mind. Every time I talk to people like from or about Australia and Canada and America as well, it's just like, I can't fathom. Like if I have to travel further than an hour to see someone, I'm like, I might as well stay the night. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But like for you guys, that's just like trip to the shops. I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're happy to cross the country many days in a car, day after day. Oh. I don't know how you do it.
Intense. So do you find then, I mean, this is a perfect example of this. So you find then that the stuff that you do online in terms of promotion, which I'm guessing you do mainly for online students, does that cross over to promoting what you do for offline students as well? Or are you also like promoting offline, you know, are you sticking flyers up in coffee shops and all of that kind of more traditional offline promotion as well? Or are you
I'm not doing
online?
The traditional promotion anymore. Okay. I did have a few ads around in local coffee shops and different areas. I've stopped that. I found it hard to trace where the people were coming from those things. I think I did at one point a letterbox drop, and I did a few like community boards and things like that. So we don't do that anymore. But because Facebook can let you geotag places and you can say that the event is in this place, and Facebook knows everything, including where you are, it's presenting the local events to local people. So it works both ways. So we're able to talk online and tell people wherever you are, we can help you. But also when we do run we have monthly events in the city, and those ones, people locally will have it come up in their newsfeed.
So in terms of teaching, it's online and offline. In terms of promotion, it's pretty much all online.
Yes.
Interesting. Cool. That's really interesting. That's definitely a shift from, I mean, the last time I was working with offline stuff, really, I was still doing offline promotion. Like you said, the letterbox drops and like everywhere, every house I'd go to, I'd be like, where's the nearest signboard? I can like stick a little poster up, you know? So yeah, but now I don't have to do any of that because most of my business is online in terms of the teaching stuff. So it's interesting that even now, when you're still teaching offline, the idea of promotion has pretty much all shifted online. Okay. Yes. So another thing then that you have done offline is retreats, right? Now I thought, because I've only spoken to you for about probably over a year now, actually. And I thought you'd only hosted one retreat, but you told me you've hosted for 6 years, one every year.
Yes,
that's like you're like ahead of the curve on that because they feel so new. So in addition to kind of the regular offline sessions that you do, how are the retreats different in terms of everything, planning, organizing, making it happen?
So they're very different. And it's a bit of a push and pull offering. Every so often I go, I love doing them, I want to do these all the time, and take a group of like a small group of people to the south of France. My family's moved from Paris to Provence, and these immersion language retreats, we started putting people in host families, and it was that beautiful connection with the locals. The planning included finding host families, finding backup host families in case every one on our list fell through right before we arrived. Organizing an itinerary, but because it's a small group and we're doing, it's all about, you're not going to be on a big bus trip with, okay, everyone hops off here and we're in Cannes for 3 hours and in 3 hours we'll see you at the bus. It's very much, we're all eating together, we're having breakfast together, we're going to the supermarket together to make a dinner, an apéritif dînatoire, which is this a big, beautiful spread of lots of different bits of food that end up being as much as a full three-course dinner in terms of amount of food. We do the organizing meant I had to have people there and contact, and that's why I've only ever done it in this little village, because I know an artist there who could teach us and take the class and do a French immersion art class. So they taught us pottery, we had some painting classes, cooking classes, and they're all connections and people I know or who know my family, and we could reach out to them. So it's easy enough when you know exactly where you're going and you know families and you've got contact. If I was to do even an immersion retreat in Paris, where I haven't lived since I'm a teenager, since I was 16, that I think I would find very hard, much harder in terms of planning and organizing.
That is really interesting because I've been toying with this idea. Like I see people doing it, I think, wow, that's so exciting. I'd love to do that. Like I'd love to like take people to Paraguay and like just be like, right, let's go, let's learn Guarani, guys. But that feels so hard because it just feels so far away. And there's like so much to think about it. So it's interesting that, so for every year, for the 6 years, the six times you've done this, you've gone to the same village because you've got those connections you've built up over your kind of lifetime through family, but then also through doing this made them stronger, presumably. So that's part of what makes it easier to make it happen every year.
Yeah, it makes it possible to redo, because if I had to change, and I've had some people come twice on this retreat and they've said, oh, could we go somewhere else? I'm like, nah, you're just gonna have to find someone else to go somewhere else, because I want you to have the same experience of, hey, this is my sister's house up the road, and hey, let's go say hi to these people. They've known my family since forever, and they get to talk to local people, and at the markets they go, oh, you're back with your group of Australian ladies, and come over here and we'll have a chat. And if I'm a tourist too, I can't break through that barrier of being a local, and that's my promise on these retreats. So it's particular, it's limiting me, but my selfish goal is to go visit my family with these, and I'm able to offer a retreat that isn't something that many people offer. So,
and the other thing is, if you went to Paris, if you went to any big city, any big kind of typical tourist hub, if you like, there's going to be so much more English. It's going to be unavoidable that, like, there'll be at least one restaurant, even if it's not intentional that you eat there, but that you walk past, you know, a McDonald's, you walk past a restaurant with a picture menu, and they give everyone an English menu when you sit down, and it's like, oh, but going where you go, that makes that just so much less likely to happen.
Yeah, that's really absolutely cool. I mean, in the touristy places, the menu is translated, so it's not even that they've made a judgment call and give you the English menu because you look like you're not from these parts. They actually give you a menu that's got both languages, and you know you're in a touristy place, right? I said, just check the menu. If it's already pre-translated, move on, keep walking, find somewhere where the menu is only in France, and already you'll have a slightly different experience.
Yeah, my rule always used to be avoid picture menu restaurants. And then when I first went to Asia, and like you go to like Singapore and Japan, and they've got the actual plastic dishes, and then it just becomes impossible because they're like normal good places to eat. So it's like, okay, I'm just gonna use the models this time to help me pick what to eat.
Absolutely, that rule works well, I think, for Europe, but maybe not.
Yeah, it's definitely not a worldwide rule. So what advice then would you have for someone looking to start bringing in offline elements?
So advice I'd give, so if they've already done some online and they've got some experience in teaching, I think maybe one is kind of a pretend advice. It's, you don't have to go all online or all offline. You can dip your toes and try it out. So you don't need to make this big master plan to shift everything and say goodbye, tell your online students, hey, in 6 months time, I'll have transitioned out of it. Like, you can do both. Absolutely. There's no reason why you can't. You get to wear yoga pants for the day to your online. And you get to doll yourself up for the offline ones. So it doesn't have to be all or nothing. But I think the piece of advice that would have helped me earlier was if I had had the courage to start a local meetup group. So Meetup is a beautiful platform. It's free. And if you're an organizer, it's like a low cost to run something regularly. And then it's an annual membership, and it takes a few lessons to cover that price. So it's worth finding if there's people where you live who want to learn the language or languages you teach. And I think that local meetup is perfect to gather those people.
Yeah, I know that meetup, we haven't even had a chance to talk about it, but that's been a huge, huge part of your success for sure.
Yeah, it has. And I think I started very conservatively thinking no one's going to want to come. And I've had coffee with 3 people, under 10 people, and the last event, and I've been running these for 3 years, but the last event, which was our end of year one, we had a sponsor who donated like a crate full of red and green French macaron from a local country. So they sponsored us for 2 years. Last year they did a gingerbread house with the French speak logo on it. So we're getting local businesses to help out, but at the start it was me and a free event. So hey, just come along and practice. And now we've got a token, $5-$10 depending on the event, for you to attend. And you're in a nurturing group. There's a teacher on hand to ask all the questions. And it's my time, and I've gained all this experience, so I feel I can justify a low cost group and therefore facilitate a really safe group. They also get some notes after the event and things like that. So I find ways to add things, but you can start the meetup, offer it free for 6 months, 12 months, see how it goes and go from there, because you'll probably most likely get your first offline students from there.
I was going to say, presumably then people that have come to the meetups have then started learning with you on a more personal basis. Yeah.
Yes. Really some cool. Have came to the meetup, never took a lesson, and then the first thing they bought was a retreat.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. and some people from the Facebook group went to the retreat, so that was one or two, and some were teachers who wanted that immersion in France that even though they're teachers, they don't always get. So from living so far away, having a holiday all packaged up for you is quite attracting. So attractive, I should say. So you can do lots of different things with those people. And yeah, I think it's a lovely way to get started offline and see if that language has legs.
Yeah. Ah, exciting. Cool. Thank you. I think it's great as well what you said about don't feel like, you know, you have to close one door to just do online or just do offline. You can definitely have feet in both camps. So yeah, thanks for saying that as well. Okay, so it's time for your final five. This is a little quick fire round we do just to end the interview. Okay, so are you ready?
I am. I think so.
I feel like
the stress levels go up.
This is the point where we need like a little jingle, like doom 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 doom. Imagine a little spotlight. Okay. Right. I'm kidding. Relax and breathe. Okay. Your favorite thing about teaching languages online?
It allows me to travel and teach wherever I am, and it allows me to work during school hours because I've got a little one at the moment who needs attention outside school hours.
Nice. Recommended read?
For students, I would say reread a book that you've read once or many times in English and tackle that one in French. Don't make your first French read one you're discovering.
Cool. That's good advice. So a fan of the Harry Potter in French team.
A lot of students pick that one. Yes.
And what about recommended read for teachers?
Recommended read for teachers, probably The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks.
Okay.
About taking big leaps in your, it's a bit about mindset, and it really talks to, I think, entrepreneurs and solo teachers in taking, facing fear and doing this anyway.
Nice. I've not heard of that. I will put it in the show notes. Recommended podcast.
For students, I've got for beginners, Coffee Break French. Intermediate, probably a teacher down in Australia, a French teacher, but she's down in Australia and she's done lots of interviews. It's called French Voices.
Okay.
And advanced, I quite like News in Slow French.
Cool.
For current affairs. And for teachers, Teach Languages Online podcast, of course.
Oh, you're too kind. Okay.
I love listening to yours. I jump on every episode as soon as they come out.
Advice for new online language teachers.
Okay, for online language teachers, I think to remember that your expertise can be shown in a few ways. One is being a good curator of content, because if you're an online teacher and you get a student online, they've probably already figured out sources of information, whether they've subscribed to 5 or 10 different newsletters, websites, lots of YouTube channels and things like that. So they can easily feel in overwhelm. So I think for online tutors and teachers, being a good curator and guiding them through the essentials is really important, as well as setting up a clear roadmap so that they know they're in good hands and not just have ad hoc lessons that don't really build upon each other.
Cool. Where can people find out more about you?
My website is probably number one, so frenchspeak.com.au. And online, I hang out on Facebook way too much. So I've got a French Speak Facebook page, and I'm always posting lots of things on there. And there's some nice freebies for any teachers out there who are also learning French.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time talking to me today. I know for you recording this now, it's late night. It's not too late.
No, not too late. 8 p.m.
Okay. It's always a challenge trying to catch the far edges of the world from from where I am. But I do appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today for the podcast. And thanks. And I will speak to you soon, no doubt.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Bye, Lindsay.
Bye. You've been enjoying Teach Languages Online, the podcast for online language teachers and budding ones too, brought to you by me, Lindsay Williams of Lindsay Does Languages.
And a quick reminder before we wrap up this episode. You can get your copy of my free teacher planner now. Whoop whoop. Just visit lindsaydoeslanguages.com/free teacher planner. That's lindsaydoeslanguages.com/free teacher planner. You can find everything you need from this show over at lindsaydoeslanguages.com/teach languages online. And have a great week and share this episode with a friend you know will love it too. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Bye.